Miami.
Well, this is the music Dr. Rick Lehman chooses.
My hometown.
Miami.
Yeah.
We're live at the Slider House. Hope you enjoyed Hockey Sense. Brought to you by MTC Truck Driver Training. And, of course, Gateway Buick GMC. Great conversation with Logan Brown. This is Sports Medicine brought to you by Gateway Buick GMC. You remember Jeff Brown.
Oh, absolutely.
Stud, eh?
Yeah. I mean, great player. Son's a great kid. And, you know, you really like to see that. You like, in every sport, you like to see kids of great athletes make it. You know, you just always say to yourself, wow, you know, obviously there's a genetic component, but it just makes, you know, the dad, and you just feel good.
No surprise that these guys, I mean, you look at Keith Tkachuk, his kid obviously had a great rookie season. He's going to have another kid drafted in the first round next year.
It's amazing.
But these bloodlines, you got to break that down for me. The genealogy effect here, right? I mean, there's something to be said when you, not just growing up in the environment, but there's got to be something genetic here too.
Well, you know, if you look at it, you know, this is going to sound terrible, and I apologize to our listeners, but if you look at horse racing, they spend unbelievable amounts of money trying to figure out how to make horses run fast, whatever distance, etc. And so you have the same situation here. You got kids that have great genetics, and with their great genetics, you got a phenomenal environment, right? I mean, they live it, they breathe it, they start skating young. Their dads, who are NHL probably Hall of Famers, are teaching them how to skate, teaching them how to play, teaching them the tricks, and the genetics are huge. So they're starting out already way ahead of the curve. And what happens is they just really, really prosper. Their dad's already made the mistakes. The family's already been through it. They know how the drill is. And you know what? You see it over and over and over again.
Well, we see it here. I mean, this guy's not even 19 years of age, and he's 6'6".
Yeah, right? That doesn't hurt, huh?
I need to be 6'6".
You could do a lot of things. You could play, you know, professional basketball. You could play professional volleyball. I mean, you could do a lot of things if you're 6'6". You could pitch.
But what if you're like, you know what I feel bad for? You know, there's people that are like 7-footers who can't play basketball at all. I mean, some people think that if as long as you're 6'11" or 7 foot, that you're automatically a good basketball player. I mean, there are plenty of tall people in this world who can't do anything athletically.
Well, you know, most that's really good. Most people that are tall can't do anything athletically, and the reason is, so look at the last series. Look at
which
the guy
is why Kevin Durant is so remarkable.
That's
right?
Where I was headed. I mean, yeah. The guy could be a point guard, right? He can take the ball down the court. You know, he can dribble. He can shoot. He can do everything on the court. Same thing with LeBron James. These guys are, you know, they're 6'10", 6'11", 6'9", in a 5'9" body. I mean, they're so agile. They're so quick. But most people that are 7 feet tall really don't have the agility, the speed, or the coordination. And really, most people in the world don't have the speed and the coordination. How many people can play NBA basketball? But as you get taller, it's harder to be coordinated. So at 6'6", to be able to play in the NHL means not only are you 6'6", but you have to have all the coordination, the foot speed, the crossover, all the agility, the toughness. And plus, you know, what percentage of people in the world are 6'6"? And I'll tell you, the answer is about 2%.
Is that what it is?
Roughly 6'6" or above, 1.5%. Almost 2%.
But we're seeing it in football right now. Quarterbacks are 6'6". Goaltenders in the National Hockey League are 6'5", 6'7". I mean, the average height of a goaltender of the NHL is north of 6'2".
So what's happened? You know, I'll tell you what's happened. Those people are selected out. And that's what I was just saying. If you're 5'9", and you have those same skills, you know, you're working at the CVS. But if you're 6'5", 6'6", that's who Major League Baseball is looking for in their pitchers.
Pitchers are 6'6".
That's exactly right. Volleyball players, professional tennis players. And so you get selected out when you're tall because that's who you have such an advantage, and that's who you're going to go after. So offensive linemen, you don't see any 5'8 offensive linemen or 5'8 quarterbacks, right? I mean, it doesn't happen.
My son is here. He just turned one. He's in like the 70th percentile for height. Now, when you're 1 year old and you're in the 70th percentile, can that just change, or are you going to stay there for a good portion of your life?
He's going to be the same height you are.
Really?
Honest. He's going to be – some people think that it's a differential between your spouse and yourself, and you're kind of in the middle, and that's not really true. You're going to be very close in height to your parents. So, unfortunately, he's not going to be 6'9", but he'll probably be within an inch – in terms of height of you. How tall are you?
How tall am I really, or what do I normally say?
Well, what do you say? 6'1"?
I say like I'm 5'11".
All right. So he'll be 5'11", 6 feet.
Really?
Yeah, we'll say that.
Yeah. Well, he may say that. He may be 6'2".
Yeah, he could be. He could be. And you know, if your wife's not that tall, so a little bit of a stretch, but that's how really, unfortunately, it works.
Yes. It's crazy how it works like that. You know, Jeff Brown's not 6'6".
He's tall, though.
He's probably 6'2". Logan, how tall is your dad? 6'2"? Yeah, he's about 6'2".
How tall is your mom?
5'9".
Yeah, but see, that's height on the woman's side.
See, I think the height on the woman's side can almost have a bigger impact than the height on the man's side. If the height on the woman's side is tall, Doc.
Yeah, that's big.
And you don't have, like, a short husband. I mean, chances are, if you're 5'11", 5'10" as a woman, like, your husband's not 6 foot, or isn't, like, 5'5", right?
Right, that's true.
Right, so...
That'd be weird.
Chances are you have a husband who's just as tall, if not taller. And I think if your mom is super tall, and I don't want to call 5'9" super tall, but it certainly isn't short, then I think that can kind of help in terms of you being much larger than your dad.
Okay, and I totally agree with that. I think if your wife... And so you kind of hit on a point, and that's exactly right. So most... There's a little bit of a differential, about 3 inches between men and women in height, usually. So someone who... A man who's 6'6" doesn't go out with a woman who's 5'1". That just doesn't happen. So they're looking for taller... Women, taller men are looking for taller women, and taller women, you know, like you said, don't want to marry a midget, so that's an issue. So then the woman's height does have an effect, but if his mom had been 5'4", he probably would have been around 6'2", like his dad.
That's amazing.
And he got, you know, the extra 4 inches from his mother's side, which is great.
You know what I read the other day, which I think is complete BS. How do I put this? I just disagree with it.
Okay, you can disagree. Let's do
it. I read that kids who drink non-cow's milk, such as soy milk, almond milk, rice milk, on average, now you got to look this up to confirm that the average is right.
I know this study, but go ahead.
It's like a quarter of an inch or half of an inch shorter than kids their age.
Yeah, that's true.
Why?
It has to do with the protein in the milk. So when you drink almond milk...
But let me say this, though, real quick.
Go ahead.
Because if you look at the labels on almond milk or rice milk...
Yeah.
Because you can buy regular rice milk or you can buy enriched rice milk.
Okay.
Okay? So look at a enriched label and compare that to a cow's milk label. The vitamin A, I think, is higher. The vitamin D is higher. The calcium is higher.
Right. But what's not higher?
Is it the protein?
The protein's not higher.
Protein, there's a lot of protein in milk, eh?
Well, in cow's milk. But in almond milk, there's like 1 gram of protein.
Okay.
Now, yes, if you buy enriched almond milk, which I'm going to tell you doesn't taste that great.
If it's sweetened, it's not bad.
Okay.
I mean, I don't drink. Do people just go around drinking milk by the glass anyway? I mean, like I don't. I would never drink a glass of almond milk. Is somebody drinking a glass of milk right now?
No.
Oh, I thought you were pointing.
We're in a bar.
I was like, wait
you
a minute.
Couldn't get any milk here.
No, probably not. But like, who drinks like a...
Little kids drink milk. But what's happened is the trend has gotten away from cow's milk because of whatever reason. And so what's happened is people have turned to rice milk, soy milk. Now, soy milk has a little bit more protein.
Mm-hmm.
But other milks that are plant-based or that are nut-based have very little protein. And so... You do have a protein differential.
Even if you're making up for it in other areas of your diet.
Well, that's not so easy. Yes and no. I mean, yes, I think if you took that same cohort and you said, okay, we're going to give you almond milk and we're going to give you tofu instead of, you know, baby food, yeah, you probably wouldn't have that differential. And it isn't that much of a differential, but I think it is protein-based. And what you're looking at is you're just looking at hundreds of kids that have had different milks and saying, all right, we're going to measure their height. So you don't know – what you don't know is a cause and effect. And maybe that's what you're saying. You don't know if that's what caused it or this is just something we figured out.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, again, they're looking at kids, I think, the age of 3 and under. And, again, when you talk about it, a quarter of an inch doesn't sound drastic.
And it really isn't.
But with a 3-year-old, maybe it looks like it is, because a quarter of an inch can make you look short when you're standing next to another 3-year-old who's a quarter of an inch taller than you.
Yeah, I'll buy that. And I think the bigger thing to look at is development. So when do the kids stop drinking milk? And the average is age about 11. And when do the kids start having other issues because they're protein deficient. So there's a lot of different issues. But I think if you look at a kid who has a very healthy diet, has a high protein diet, you'd see that that differential in milk went away. But the truth of the matter is, when you're young, from 0 to 3, you know, that's most of what you're drinking is milk. So if you're decreasing the protein significantly, you know, you probably are going to get a little bit of height differential, or you might.
Hmm. All right, that's good stuff, Doc. You didn't even know I was going to go there.
No, I you did. You're trying to fool me tonight.
Well, yeah, I thought I would.
You did,
but it didn't. What about this pregnancy changing a mother's brain for years? You know, pregnant women are different, Doc. I've experienced.
We're
getting
in trouble here, man.
I know, but you know what? She's not listening. She's actually here at the Slider House.
I saw her. She's adorable.
Pregnant women are different, though, are they not?
There's no question about it.
Why?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with hormonal changes, neurological changes, and brain changes, which have to do with bonding to your kids.
Mm-hmm.
And
while they're pregnant,
and that's a big issue. You know, apparently there's a significant amount of bonding that goes on while the woman is.
I like you say apparently. Apparently there's some bonding that goes on.
Well, while the woman's pregnant,
yes.
So it's not that they have the child, they're holding him, and oh, this is great. This kid just looks like Andy, he's so cute. So what ends up happening is people bond, you know, while the baby's in the womb, and so that's a whole different issue. And then there's a significant amount of hormone changes that occur. Some of them regress and some of them don't regress, and they kind of stay the same. So this is a very interesting study, and if you look at people before and after they have kids, women, they are different. I will tell you, they're materially different.
Yes. Well, apparently they're saying pregnancy alters the size and structure of the brain.
Correct.
The regions involved in understanding the thoughts, feelings, beliefs, and intentions of others, according to the study.
And that's all hormonal. That's 100% right. Changes the size of their pelvis, changes your ligament structure. I mean, a lot of things happen. That's all hormonal, and it does change the size of your brain.
Wow. And how do you make up or how do you recover from that? I guess you don't even know. I mean, you're just, and they say for years, does it eventually come back to a normal state?
Well, you never really get the same emotion on social cognition. You regress a little bit, but you never really come back to. And part of the reason you never come back is the adaptation you have when you have kids. You're raising your kids, and then you have further adaptations. You know, you go to work, your wife's home with the kids, and there's a whole socialization process that goes on that you're really not part of. You come home, hey, Daddy, you look great. You know, how was your day? But mom has all these adaptive changes and all this bonding, which is why kids are so close to their moms, because they have 5-6 years where that's the only person they really interact with. And so they never that adds on to this whole process. But the hormonal thing is strictly has to do with brain size, calvarium size, the ligaments changing, so the brain getting a little bit bigger, and then subsequently possible volume loss. So there's all kind of stuff that goes on. And you never really get back to baseline. But you get a little closer as your kids get older, 10, 11, 12, 13 years old.
I mean, it's amazing they do a whole study on this. All they had to do is ask me, right? I could have told them. You don't need to waste all the time doing a whole study on this.
Right, you could have said, look, they're different. I could tell you why they're different, and this is how they're different.
Hey, before we take our first break, I want to get back to the NBA Finals, obviously, with Golden State winning in 5 games. But this issue with Steve Kerr that held him out and prevented him from being on the sideline for weeks and weeks. He had back surgery. Then apparently he had fluid in a spinal cord. Like, do you recommend rehab over surgery when you're dealing with this type of back injury? It just seems like when you do a surgery and operate on a back, it opens up the possibility of some of these things to happen. And I just wonder, like, if you just get to the point where you just try to rehab it as much as possible. And it's got to be an absolute last resort to undergo the knife in this situation.
So, a complex question. So, first of all, Steve Kerr had a surgery. He had what's called a spinal leak or a dural leak. And this has been going on about a year and a half. So, this wasn't like, didn't just start. And he's been dealing with it. And initially, he had the surgery, did okay. And then there was this leak. And when your spinal fluid leaks out, your brain isn't supported. So, you get these terrible headaches. And he was dealing with them fairly well. And then it just got to be terrible. The real gist of your question is a good one. I'm not a big fan of back surgery, and the reason is big surgeries have big complications. And what that means is that basically if you have a big operation, you know, big hip operation, big back operation, and you big incision and you're in very vital places, the complications are big. If you have a little operation, an arthroscopy, you know, the complications mostly should be less. So I'm not a big proponent of back surgery per se. Now, if you have to have it, you have to have it. So why would you have to have it? You would have some neurological deficit, meaning you got weakness, you had numbness, you couldn't walk up steps, you were losing strength. Those would be absolute reasons to have back surgery. But if you look at the studies and people that have just a herniated disc in their back, they do just as well with or without back surgery. So if they don't have any weakness and they're having the surgery for pain, there probably isn't much added value. So I would be in your camp. I would say you're going to rehab it and rehab it until there's some unbelievable reason that you have to have back surgery. And if you look at the two groups in a year, they're the same. The ones that had the surgery, the ones that didn't have the surgery.
But, I mean, lower back pain is, and that's different than a herniated disc, I guess, right? And right. Some of that stuff we're talking about, which is like the number one cause of injury among Americans. I mean,
number one reason people miss work in the United States
is lower back pain.
Yes, sir.
And that's just caused from just living life, basically, right?
Well, that's because we're supposed to be quadrupeds or walk on all fours, and someone decided we had to walk on two legs, and that just messed everybody up.
We should walk on all fours.
Well, if you don't want back pain, yeah.
Seems more difficult to walk on all fours than to walk on two.
It'd be weird at the mall, but it...
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, why don't more doctors feel this way? I mean, like, I know somebody who's dealing with significant back pain. They've got numbness going down the side of their leg. I mean, they're absolutely miserable. I mean, what do you do in this situation? I mean, outside of, you know, taking the advice of a doctor or a surgeon to go ahead and undergo the knife to think that you're going to feel better.
Well, I think, yeah, you know, my impression is you do biologics. You do PRP injections, stem cell injections, mm-hmm. and you treat it, as like you said, conservatively as possible. So there are a number of ways to treat it. I'm a big fan of inversion tables, you know, when these upside-down tables. I think those work very well to open up the spinal canal. And I'm a big fan of physical therapy. And I think that, you know, as you said, back surgery really should be your last resort. You always hear how good you're going to do, but no one ever wants to tell you how bad you could do.
Mm. How about that?
Well, it's serious. That back surgery is serious.
So if you were, I mean, and Steve Kerr, I mean, this when you're leaking the fluid, I mean, we're talking crazy, crazy pain, right?
Oh, I when I watch him on the bench, I can't believe he's there. I can't believe Mike Brown didn't just say, Steve, go back to bed, take your meds, let's just get this resolved. So you know that guy has a will to be on the bench because he's in pain like you can't even imagine.
Now, he says he's feeling better now.
Yeah, they just want to think.
But, and then they have to undergo another surgery because, like, what are they doing when he has?
So in the off season, they're gonna open his back up and they're gonna put what's called a dural patch. So they're gonna, you know, like you have a hole in your pants, they're gonna put a patch over the dura. Now the dura is the covering of the spinal cord. This is a no joke, no play zone. This is a big deal. Mm. And so they will put a dural patch, and the dural patch will basically cover the dural leak. Now it probably started as a little hole. But just imagine, water's forced through, the hole gets bigger and bigger. So then, just resting it doesn't allow it to heal, and so you got to do something to close up the hole, and I think that's what's going to happen.
How risky is that surgery in terms of potential paralysis?
It's not that risky, but what he may get is something called arachnoiditis, which is an inflammation or an infection in the lining of the back, and if he gets that, he'll have back pain the rest of his life. It'll never get better.
Hmm. You know, we're at the Slider House here at the corner of McKnight and Manchester. But again, it's not your tiny little, like, White Castle sliders. I mean, these will fill you up, and they've got some great, great specials going on where you can buy two and you get a side, and you can kind of mix and match a different type of sliders.
This place is unreal.
And again, they're creative sliders, right? I mean, it's not just your typical beef patty. They've got the lobster slider. They've got chicken sliders. They've got meatloaf sliders. They also have the best patio in all of St. Louis, voted number one by St. Louis Magazine. 85 different craft beers in a can. So if you like drinking out of a can, there's something about drinking out of a can, too. I like that.
Manly.
Manly. And they got 85 different beers to choose from, including the most expensive beer in the world, I believe, that goes for like $15 a beer. It even says it's from Belgium. It's made in Belgium. I don't know if it's called the Pink Pig or something like that, but it has a pink pig on it. I got to find somebody who has the can. But it says on the can it's the best beer in the world. And it's very, very expensive. I mean, they sell it for $15, not because they're trying to make money on it. Believe me, their cost, they told me what their cost is. It's not much less than that. So
we should try one.
We might have to try one. We'll be the judge.
Yeah.
If it's the best beer in the world.
I'll split it with you.
Okay.
That's $7.50.
Yeah, and we'll be the judge if it's the best beer in the world.
Yeah.
And I think it might be. But, again, these surgeries, when you're dealing with back surgery, you got to be very, very careful. I've got to throw one other topic at you before we go to a break. Eating big meals versus, so I mentioned the sliders, you know, it's not like a big half-pound burger, you know, like they're sliders. But do you believe in eating three big meals or several mini meals per day?
So this topic, the opinion on this topic changes every 10 years. The question's the same, answer changes every 10 years. So it used to be believed that you eat three meals a day, you don't snack, and that's the healthiest thing. Then somebody says, well, that's not really the way it is. You should eat very small meals a day, and that way you don't get very, very hungry and you don't overeat, mm-hmm. and snacking is good. So you eat every 2 hours small meals.
Right.
So then somebody finally said, you know what, we're going to do a study on this because we're sick of hearing this argument. We don't really know what the answer is. And the truth of the matter is it doesn't make any difference. So it may be better actually to eat three meals and not to eat a lot of small meals. But the truth of the matter is, if you want to lose weight, we've talked about this before, you can't eat late, can't eat at 10 at night, 11 at night, 9 at night.
I know, most of us do that.
And all of us do that because we do that.
Yes.
And if you keep your meals moderate, you know, you don't go crazy, three meals is probably every bit as good as eating every 2 hours. Because what ends up happening is you have an insulin release every time you eat, and all these small meals creates an insulin release, and basically that is where you're going to kind of pull calories in and gain weight. So that's the issue. So at this point, I would tell you that, again, it probably doesn't make a whole lot of difference, but eating small meals all day long is not the ticket.
Can that create large swings in blood sugar and decrease hunger and prevent impulsive snacking throughout the day when you're eating these small, frequent meals? Because some studies suggest that eating more often may not be, you know, the best thing for you.
Well, and that was the theory. The theory is if you have a small meal, you get a smaller insulin release, so that brings in the nutrients, packs on the calories, and if you eat big meals, you know, then what happens is, just what you said, you have these big glucose swings, and you tend to overeat, etc. And basically what they find is that doesn't really make that big a difference. If you have, unless you're going to eat crazy big meals, then you don't get ravenous as you swing down. What happens is you get the insulin release, then you get very hungry. The calories, you bring everything in, then you get very hungry. You kind of have what's called rebound, and then you tend to eat too much. But if you're careful and you do the right thing and you eat carefully and healthily, then that's not going to happen. Now, if you eat a five-piece of chocolate cake, yeah, that's going to happen.
You believe in breakfast?
No.
Really?
No.
Tell me about that.
Well, you know, this is another myth. Everybody says if you eat breakfast, you'll eat less and you're less hungry and, you know, you're better satiated. But if you look at the real studies, uh-huh. unless you're going to eat an all-protein breakfast.
Right, which, you know, is what? Like?
Like eggs or cheese or something, and you're not going to really eat any. So what do we eat for breakfast? We have some cereal, we have a pancake, you know, muffin, whatever. So unless you're going to eat an all-protein breakfast, I think eating breakfast makes you much more hungry for lunch because you get just what you talked about. You get that insulin swing. So if you can avoid breakfast, which is hard, you know, drink some coffee, maybe have a couple pieces of cheese or some nuts or something, high protein, you're going to find that you eat far less. So if you can get to 10 o'clock, 10, 11 o'clock, eat a pretty good-sized lunch, eat dinner at 5. Now, this is, you know, this is all fantasy pie in the sky, mm-hmm. and not eat after that. You'll never be heavy the rest of your life.
You know, one study, really?
Never be heavy the rest of your life.
If you do what now? Do it, say it again?
If you try to, for breakfast, you wake up, you're really hungry, so you eat a little protein, you know, some nuts, some cheese, whatever.
Not like bacon, fried bacon or something, right?
not like fried bacon.
Okay.
And then you... So you have some protein, you have eggs, you know, something, but you skip the bread, you skip the grits, you skip the potatoes. And then you get to 10, 11 o'clock, and you have a pretty substantial lunch, you know, a pretty healthy lunch, but a big lunch. And then you have a moderate meal at 5 o'clock, whatever that is, mm-hmm. you know, steak, two hamburgers at Slider House, whatever. You'll never be – there's nothing you can do to make you heavy. Do that 5 days a week. Eat whatever you want the other days. You'll be golden.
All right, there's one study that suggests that people who didn't eat breakfast actually consumed 400 fewer calories per day than those who did.
Right. That's what I just said.
Yeah. So who needs a study when you had Dr. Rick Lehman?
Oh, my, you know, but think about it. The earlier you start with insulin and the glucogen swings, the hungrier you're going to be, and that's the problem. But it's hard to skip breakfast because you wake up hungry.
Yeah. I know, but, you know, sometimes, and we talked about nutritional bars and some of these. I mean, they're not all bad. I mean, there's some
decent ones. No, I don't think they're bad.
No. I mean, there's some bad ones. I mean, believe me. And we mentioned some of them are, like, worse than, like, a Snickers bar. Might as well eat a Snickers bar.
That's true.
I mean, they're, like, you know, basically commercialized candy bars.
Yeah, they have 40 grams of carbohydrates, 3 grams of protein, and they're not good for you. But if you go and you get a Clif Bar or some of the, you know, mm-hmm. nutritional bars, and you got to read the label. We've talked about that before. Read the label. How much? What is the protein-carbohydrate ratio? That is the whole world. How much carbohydrate are you getting, having to eat to get the protein you want? So if you got 30 grams of carbohydrates and 15 grams of protein, you got a good bar. If you got 60 grams of carbohydrates and 2 grams of protein, like you said, go get a Snickers bar. You do better. It's cheaper.
Some fruits are bad for you?
Oh, high glycemic fruits are terrible for you.
Which ones would that be?
Pineapples, probably not all that good. Cantaloupes, not that good. Bananas are terrible. But they're not bad for
bananas.
You.
Bananas?
They're not bad for you. They're bad for you because they're high glycemic food. So what they do is they cause your blood sugar to rise very high and drop very fast.
Mm.
So you know, that's why table sugar isn't very good for you, because it's a simple sugar. It doesn't take much to get absorbed, not much energy for you to process it. So bananas are high glycemic fruit. Now, they have tons of potassium. You know, they got a lot of good stuff in them. But in terms of weight loss, people that have diabetes, people who are trying to control their blood sugar, highs and lows, not the best.
I didn't know bananas were in that category. I thought bananas were okay. Because the good fruits, we're talking berries, right? Blueberries.
So if you said, what are the perfect fruits? And again, you know, we're talking pie in the sky. You're talking about blackberries, blueberries, raspberries. They're great. They're great for you. Apples are good for you. Watermelon's good for you. And it's mostly water. But food that cause your blood sugar to jack straight up and then drop, they're not necessarily bad for you, but they're not real good for you, you know, in terms of blood sugar. But in terms of nutrients, they might be great for you.
Okay. We've got a bunch of kids here.
Oh, they're adorable.
Hey, we got to get into a number of different topics that I want to get into, Doc, before we get out of here, including this no-sugar craze diet that apparently is out there. 1 month sugar detox.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that when we come back.
All right.
All right. Also, Natasha Kwan is here from Frieda's in University City. We'll kick around some different topics with her. We got lots to get into as we're live at the Slider House here at the corner of McKnight and Manchester. As always, this is brought to you by Gateway Buick GMC. What do you have to say about Gateway Buick GMC, Doc?
Well, you know, I love the place. I love my truck, first of all. I got this Denali truck, and it's just bad. I mean, it's just a great truck. And to be honest with you, their service is impeccable. Go see Mr. Davis up there. They do a great job. They will take care of you. And if you mention the show, they will really take care of you. So I can't say enough good about the service. And even if you just need service on your vehicle, you bought it somewhere else, maybe not so happy with the service, their service is unreal.
Well, they're one of the only dealers in the area qualified to say they're a certified elite service department.
That's right. And, you know, you get a free warranty. I mean, it's insane.
Well, here's what it means.
All right, tell us.
All right, ease and the quality care that your vehicle deserves, and they deserve it, right? Over 37 service bays, Doc. So they get you in, they get you out, they get you on the road very, very quickly. Gateway Buick GMC offers a shuttle service. And it's not like Doc is like, you don't even need Doc to pick you up. They got a shovel service. And they have online appointments, too, which I think every place should have online appointments nowadays.
I agree.
I mean, it's 2017.
I agree.
But Gateway Buick GMC certainly understands that. They were literally meet or beat any tire price in town, too. People don't realize they sell tires at Gateway Buick GMC.
I know, and that's an interesting thing. So if you bring in a coupon or an ad and it says these tires are XXX, they will meet it or beat it. That's pretty amazing.
Meet it or beat it. Shop or book or service online at www.stlouisbuickgmc.com, or you can always call them at 888-865-9419. 888-865-9419. Gateway is the right way. We're live at the Slider House here in Rock Hill at the corner of McKnight and Manchester. I'm Andy Strickland. Dr. Rick Lehman's in the house. We're here till 8 o'clock before Charlie Tuna takes over here on 590 The Fan KFNS. We'll take a break and come back with much, much more. Don't go anywhere.